Now, it sounds like something from the Cold War, a social network secretly backed by the US government with the ultimate aim of undermining Cuba's communist government. It was called Zunzenia, which is slang for a Cuban hummingbird's tweet. It went online in 2009 and had over 40,000 users before it was shut down a couple of years ago. According to the Associated Press, which unearthed the story, Zunzenia was created using secret shell companies and funded through foreign banks. But White House spokesman Jay Carney has denied that it was an attempt to overthrow the government in Havana.
The program referred to by the Associated Press was a development program run by the United States Agency for International Development. And that program was completed in 2012. As you know, USAID is a development agency, not an intelligence agency. Suggestions that this was a covert program are wrong. Congress funds democracy programming for Cuba to help empower Cubans to access more information and to strengthen civil society. These appropriations are public, unlike covert action.
Well, Larry Press is Professor of Information Systems at California State University and an expert on the internet in Cuba. Larry, good morning to you. First of all, I suppose we better establish what kind of access do normal Cubans have to the internet?
Very poor access. It's what access there is very expensive. Most people can't afford it. And it's also slow. It's nothing like what you have in England or what we have in the U.S.
Yeah, well, it can be slow here as well, but perhaps not as bad as it is in Cuba. No. So this is Zunzenia then. What was it and how did it work?
It was a Twitter-like network. The idea is that the people with cell phones in Cuba until just the last week or two really couldn't get on the internet. And the few that have them still can't afford it. So it was Twitter with using text messages rather than a Twitter client the way you're used to doing it. So you would just send a text message in and it would become a tweet.
It's interesting. We've seen in Turkey where access to Twitter was restricted recently, people going back to using, because you can get on Twitter using text messaging. So that's kind of a fallback in place.
That's how Twitter started. And that's one of the ways people got around the blockade in Turkey. But there are other ways, too. But in Turkey, you've got a more modern internet infrastructure. So they were able to circumvent the block and get on the same way you and I get on.
So the U.S. hasn't denied that it provided some level of funding for this enterprise. The question mark over is, you know, who was behind it and what were they trying to achieve? But when you do, you know, you look at the impact that social media had in the Arab Spring and in parts of the world like Iran, you know, there is a feeling, I suppose, that it could have led to something similar in Cuba if it had been left to grow in a more organic way.
Yeah. Again, the connectivity that people had in the countries you just named is better than what's in Cuba. They weren't just dependent upon text messages. But yeah, I think the attitude of USAID is to provide communications capability and people use it. And that's something I'm all for. That being said, they seem to be denying that it was covert. I don't believe I'd like to see the evidence of that or see where it was publicized. And the other thing that's a little bit dicey, it bothers me, is they were not just providing this communication channel, they were monitoring it. And so they were capturing information about the people that were using it.
Yeah, we've heard a lot about the U.S. monitoring the use of the internet lately. What kind of information were they able to get?
Well, they would know what the people were saying, so they could categorize them as sort of pro or friendly or not friendly. They'd know who they were and be able to identify them. And that sounds, like you say, kind of really familiar these days.
Yeah. I mean, is there anything? It's been shut down now, this network, Zunzenia. It hasn't existed since 2012. Is there anything that sprung up to replace it in Cuba?
No, and that's the thing that's kind of interesting. I just heard the statement again from the White House guy that played just before I came on. They shut it down. If it was a development effort, why didn't they keep it going? I mean, it was just funded for 2 years, and when the funding stopped, they stopped. And that I didn't quite understand that. But yeah, it ended abruptly when the funding stopped.
Is there really any kind of response from the...
Nothing.
Sorry, Professor, go ahead.
People in Cuba can send text messages back and forth to each other. But as far as I know, there's no kind of, you know, Twitter-like bulletin board that they can have conversations on.
It's interesting, the role of social media. And we talked about, you know, mentioned the Arab Spring, talked about Iran and places like that. This idea that social media allows groups to get together that perhaps wouldn't otherwise have a platform, its role in changing the conversation in parts of the world where sometimes those conversations haven't been able to take place is fascinating, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. You know, the first example of this that I became involved in was in 1991, the Soviet coup attempt. I don't know if people even remember that, but this was there was a system, a messaging system called UUCP, and people in Russia used it to communicate with each other and to communicate with us in the outside world during that sort of a three-day siege when the generals took over the Soviet Union. So, yeah, this stuff's been going on for a long time. But as you see in Turkey, if you have a modern infrastructure with millions of users, it's really impossible to stifle it.
Interesting. Professor, thank you very much indeed. That's Larry Press, Professor of Information Systems at California State University and an expert on the Internet in Cuba.